Good morrow. So, hopefully you know, you are listening to the Spiral Marketing Podcast, presumably on purpose. I won't go too deep into an introduction here because we jump right in, but today's guest is yet another testament that I am fortunate to have an amazing network of insightful friends. You probably also have those smart friends that consistently post interesting ideas online that you want to explore a bit more. Well, today, you get to learn from one of those folks who can uniquely answer the question that I believe most entrepreneurs, especially tech entrepreneurs and startup folks, have asked themselves, which is, should I move my business and myself to San Francisco? So, if you're going to San Francisco.
What is the DNA of business marketing? How do we market ourselves now and in the future? Brand communications is evolving. Are you? Let's explore together. Spiral upwards. This is Spiral Marketing.
Drew Dillon is the Vice President of Product and Engineering at AnyPerk, overseeing product strategy, design, and execution. Prior to AnyPerk, Drew was the Director of Product Management at Yammer. For 3 years, observed and served as a Principal Program Manager after Yammer's acquisition by Microsoft. Drew studied and got his Bachelor of Science in Computer Science from Virginia Tech. Drew, welcome to the show.
Hey, Carl. Thanks for having me.
What a pleasure, man. So you and I have known each other for over 20 years now.
Yeah, it's nuts. Once you start getting into our age and start counting decades, it gets a little scary.
That's true. I still remember cracking jokes back in French class in high school. Yeah. What a long way we have come since then. Oh, things change and maybe stay the same. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, of course, I thought of you recently as you live and work in San Francisco, and I took a half work, half social trip to San Francisco recently, and I thought, my, I bet a lot of listeners who are entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial have considered whether or not they should bring their startup, idea, efforts, business over to San Francisco. And it's such a hot spot for that kind of a thing. And knowing you, I know that you have a particularly well-informed perception and perspective on that particular topic. So I thought that we could start right there and collect your just gut reaction on how startups and San Francisco mix.
Yeah, absolutely. And in my experience, I've been working, obviously, I'll date myself here and say I graduated computer science right during the first dot-com bust. So it was actually kind of always my dream to move out here. But right at the time I graduated from college, that was a really bad idea. So first thing first, I went into government before I moved out here and worked in government IT for a while. But yeah, I think, you know, the past, you know, 10, 12 years, I've been working at startups, mostly in the what they call kind of the growth phase, not necessarily the you know, the seed stage, which is like figuring out the idea, A round, which is kind of like, okay, figuring out how to get that idea from, you know, initial product market fit to scale, and then B and beyond, which is kind of growth and scale and figuring out, okay, we've got an engine that's working. How do we tune it? How do we make it better? So it's only in my recent experience that I've really been working kind of earlier in the life cycle of startups. But obviously being around here, you see a lot of, you go to any conference and you hear kind of the sports app for people who take Lyft kind of ideas thrown around and that kind of stuff. There's an interesting thing. I think a lot of us still have that like 90s mentality of like what Silicon Valley is, even calling it Silicon Valley. Like technically Silicon Valley is about an hour south of here where Yahoo is. But most of what's really happening around here right now, unless you're a hardware startup, is happening in San Francisco, which is a very different kind of beast culturally, but most importantly, economically. Because I think in that late 90s period, it got to a spike where housing prices and rent and all that stuff exploded, but not on the, I think it got to where it is right now, but it was a peak and then it died. Rents have been going up for like the past like 5 or 6 years. I think this year is the first time rents went down. It's a funny thing to relate to startups, but most startups' biggest costs are payroll, and real estate. So if you're a pre-product market fit company trying to figure out what your company is going to be, the idea of taking on, you know, a rent this high or salaries this high is kind of a big gamble. And so what you'll find is companies that have made it to Series A, Series B in downtown San Francisco end up being very well run and very well organized. But I don't think there could be as, I think there could be a lot more if people had actually started elsewhere. Which is a lot of advice you'll hear from VCs right now is go find product market fit in a place where it's cheaper to live, because you don't really need the best of the best at that point. What you need is basically grit and an open mind.
Right.
That's to find product market fit. But once you find product market fit, what this area, what San Francisco is really good at is scaling. We do have great engineers here. We do have great product people, great marketing people, great salespeople. Great network. People are willing to help you out. You know, I meet my CEOs from Japan. I know French entrepreneurs. I know even the Zapier folks from Tennessee. I actually went back to Tennessee after Y Combinator. Who came here, were immediately able to tap into the network, leverage the network when it made sense. Not necessarily at that time when cash was so critical.
I love that line. San Francisco is a great place to scale. It's so simple, but encompasses so much. It helps almost immediately answer the question, should I come to San Francisco? Yeah. Should I bring my idea to San Francisco? Well, are you ready to scale?
Yep, exactly. Do you have, how many people are paying you, or in a more consumerized world, how many people are, you know, using the thing? How many eyeballs do you have? And are you ready to basically tune the engine? Or are you still figuring out like what the pieces of the engine are?
Sure. Do you have a lot of stories of basically getting and having to answer that question?
Not really. It's more observation. I've had a lot of the sports app for people who take Lyft. You know, that a lot of ideas around here sound really dumb the first time you hear them. But I'm still of that mindset that if somebody had like tried to pitch me Twitter way back when, I would have said no way. Like, <that's, laughs> why just 140 characters? That's silly. So I'm not a great talent scout, but like it's more about like, where they go with that dumb idea. Mark Andreessen famously wrote like a defense of the Yo app, if you remember that, where you can literally just like open up a page and hit the Yo button at your friends and it just sends them a push notification that just says Yo. Like, I don't know, I don't think that went anywhere, but like the fact that he stood up and said, I think there could be something to this app means that there could have been something that they found. They could have adjusted, could have found some other way of getting notifications right, or having a single notification system that you plug a bunch of things into. But if you try and do that here, you're going to run out of money before you figure those things out. And it could take a really long time. I think the other phrase I hear around here a lot is overnight success, 10 years in the making. It might look like you just succeeded. Like Slack was an attempt at a gaming app. Same thing with Stuart Butterfield's previous company, Flickr, was also an attempt at a gaming app that turned into Flickr.
Amazing.
It's just like the number of times you can resurrect yourself is a key metric in how successful you're going to be as an entrepreneur.
Well, I wonder if that conflicts with the scale idea in that they have to pivot and stick to it and just keep pushing, even if the idea changes. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think those are... What you're not seeing is the downside of that. Like they, in both cases, I think from shifting from a gaming app, they had to lay a bunch of people off. And could they have, you know, if they were elsewhere, well, they'll take Slack off the table because Stuart's pretty well known around here. So he already had a pretty good network he could tap into. But, you know, take anybody else who is going at that exact same idea, trying to pivot from a gaming app to a group messaging or group chat SaaS application, like, before they actually get companies to use it, though, they will have run out of money here because they won't have raised enough, or their name won't have been prominent enough, or they won't have been in the news enough. That's a bit of an oddball case. It's really more about really what you can do with your remaining resources and how many more shots you get at it.
Understood. Yeah. Having runway to actually exist and thrive in San Francisco sounds paramount.
Yeah. Yep.
As an executive for a startup, it's an issue you understand quite well, I'm sure.
Yeah, not to mention paying your own rent. I mean, that's right. You know, you can live on your friend's couches for a while, but eventually they'll want you to get a real job.
Sure. Yeah, the family might not appreciate that too much on either side.
Yeah.
So how about the story of how you specifically got pulled into San Francisco?
Yeah, so like I said, it was always kind of a dream of mine, you know, especially when I was a young engineer, I kind of saw the Bay Area kind of like the big leagues. I think that mindset still exists, although people have positive and negative impressions of it. People who aren't here could say, like, I want to go there and I want to do that. Or people outside of here say, well, a good coder can be anywhere. I don't really have an opinion there. I think there are arguments to be made for each. But what I did is I realized a couple years out of college, I was never actually going to be a very good engineer.
Good realization.
I was that engineer. Not that I was a bad coder, but a huge part of software development is actually just like completion. That last like 10% is just a total grind. That's when you find all of the bugs, all of the work becomes less fun because it's no longer like visual, make this thing work. It's just kind of like, ugh, what broke about this other thing? And I was always the engineer who's distracted by the shiny next project. And when I had that realization, I was like, okay, what else am I going to do? And at that point, a guy reached out to me. Actually, I put my resume on Craigslist for reasons that are no longer clear to me, but he reached out with a sales engineering job, which sales engineering is a pretty fun position if anybody ever gets a chance. I think some people can think of it as like a dead end, but I thought it was great because you're in sales, so you're close to where the money comes from, which is like a really enlightening place to be, just seeing how deals get done. But you don't have as high of a stress factor as the sales reps, who are kind of on the hook for all their quota. But after working there for about a year, as was common in the older generation of enterprise software, they moved me from sales engineering to product management, and with that moved out to the Bay Area. And yeah, been here ever since, bouncing around various product roles. That was a security company. Then went to Yammer again, actually as a sales engineer. So just to get my foot in the door with this crazy SaaS thing, this cloud stuff everybody was so hot on. And then ended up back in product there. And then
how was Yammer?
That was amazing. Yeah, that was kind of a one of a kind company opportunity. I was there for about a little over 2 years before we got acquired. I was there employee number 60. 3 months later, the company had like doubled in size. And then, you know, 3 years later, it was at 450 and sold to Microsoft for $1 billion. Just like creating that much value out of thin air is a wild, wild experience.
That is incredible. And I think it's a good segue to where you've now landed. But for those who are not familiar with Yammer, I mean, I think the end result of it selling for $1 billion is pretty interesting and unto itself. However, to just give it a sentence of descriptor, it's something like an internal social networking platform for businesses. Is that about sum it up?
Yeah, exactly. It was originally conceived as like a Twitter for the enterprise by David Sachs. It was was the COO of PayPal, part of the PayPal mafia, mainly because David's pretty obsessive about how people communicate within companies. And, you know, most CEOs just write that one subject line email, like they just dump everything into the subject line and nothing in the body text. And he was frustrated basically with the way that email kind of it forms this tree and you don't really know who got it and who could see it. If you're a CEO and you just want an answer to a question, it's really frustrating to not immediately be getting that back if they have to go talk to this person, that person. So the idea was like, OK, why can't I just post a message out publicly? Twitter was this brand new thing. And I can just tweet at the company and the company can write back to me and I can get all the answers that I want as fast as possible. And so that it slowly evolved in kind of a Facebook for the enterprise. But really what we were looking at was, yeah, like replacement of email and eventually kind of the evolution of the intranet, which kind of led to a natural fit with Microsoft and their big SharePoint business unit.
Interesting. Well, that vision seems in line with what Slack seems to be trying to do, but we can go off in a million tangents there. But from your work at Yammer, it seems like a pretty natural progression to go to AnyPerk.
Yeah, I think the thing that I realized I liked, I'm going to be totally honest, when I had left security as a product manager, I was convinced that I would just never work in B2B again. I'd never sell to companies again.
That's funny.
It was kind of a grind. And so I always saw Yammer as a step to like working on a consumer-y type thing, the next Instagram or whatever. But what Yammer did was convince me that you can do good work in product if you have the right kind of mindset towards what you're doing. And what Yammer was able to do by being a social network for employees was meant, it meant that you got to focus on the user and what they wanted to do and how they engaged with the app. And you got to build those kinds of things, where my previous job was basically just like, sales asked for this, I'm going to deliver this. Sales asked for that, I'm going to deliver that. This, I felt like I got to do really good product work. And because it was kind of this B2B2C model, so they say, where you're selling to IT or internal communications that's using, being used by employees. When I was going out looking for a job again, I was like, if I work in the enterprise, if I'm selling SaaS to companies, I need to like, I still want to care about users. I still want to like figure out how users want to use the thing and improve that. So AnyPerk popped up after about a year of kind of passively looking. I saw that they were looking on AngelList. I'll give a little plug there. It's a great site.
Nice.
And emailed the CEO directly. He emailed back like 5 minutes later, at like 10 o'clock on a Friday night. Came in, checked out the site. And what it was initially was basically employee discounts. So if you've ever worked at a big company, you know, they've got that like internal portal of discounts, you know, movie tickets, your Verizon, Sprint, AT&T kind of stuff. Then Microsoft, of course, had one of those. It was on this like kind of dated old site. But what my wife had found was there were a lot of really good deals in there, like this one with Bright Horizons, where they'll send a nanny to your house for the day for like $20.
Whoa.
If your kid's sick and can't go to daycare. And ordinarily that's in San Francisco, that's like $25 an hour to get somebody to your house.
Right.
You know, when I was talking to Taro and I realized like the company was making real money, even though they were small and it was a group of like young, scrappy people. And that this was also something that could help me because I am irrational and I make irrational career decisions, like working at startups where you don't make any money. And that this kind of thing could offer a career mobility to someone like myself was really, really attractive to me. And then of course, it's a B2B2C thing. We get to focus on the end user. We get to the HR teams that do buy the site really care about how the users engage with it. And ultimately, what we've come to is that we're in the business of employee happiness. And since have launched additional products, Rewards, which is really like an internal recognition product. We'll be doing more in that area around service awards and just, you know, get to think all day about how to make people happy at work, which is the fun perk.
That is. Very cool. I know you wear a lot of hats over there. What are you responsible for?
I do engineering. So the people who build the site itself and the app. I do product management, which is kind of like a strategy execution sort of role. Data, which is all the analytics on the back end. You can't figure out what users want if you don't measure what they're doing currently. And then business development sources, all of the discounts on the platform, and more recently the rewards inventory, as well as IT, just because, you know, I wasn't doing enough at that point.
No, yeah, it's just a couple of things. Amazing. Well, kind of a big question here. A little broad. What have you learned there? What have you learned at AnyPerk that you think is insightful for the general business owners and maybe startup folks?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what I learned is just, I mean, a lot of it's just free research that's floating out there that people don't think a lot about. Like there was a study that basically asked people whether they wanted a raise, an extra week of vacation, or an occasional thank you from their boss when they went above and beyond. And like 71-72% said the occasional thank you from their boss over an extra week of vacation.
Oh my gosh.
Which meant to, you know, that led to us saying, okay, recognition is a really important thing if you want to make people happy. But just like little stuff like that, I think it's made me, I think, more thoughtful of a manager just in working through the product, looking at stuff like that. Money doesn't make people happy. There was another study that said that once people hit like a certain income level, it varies based on the location, but I think they paid it at like 75K. Like money doesn't do much for that person anymore. So no longer like incentive-based compensation is not that useful after a certain point. So you have to think a bit more broadly. And then, yeah, I think the other big thing, you know, I came out with an engineering background. I was an engineer for a while, but I'd never really built an engineering team. And speaking back to that hyper-competitive, high cost of living point earlier, I had no idea whether I could build an engineering team or not. When I took over, it was 4 people. We've since grown it up to 17 over the past couple of years. So that's been a really fun and interesting challenge. It's kind of like, what motivates engineers? It isn't the salary, although that's certainly a checkbox. But it is having an interesting and compelling mission. They get to come in and work on something that's interesting. They get to flex their brains and that they care about, and employee happiness, you know, does that for our team.
Love it. That's awesome, yeah, because you indirectly, maybe directly, have to compete with the Googles of the area, right?
Yeah. And that was the original pitch, I think, of the discounts product. Like, Google has all this stuff. And initially it was, you know, small companies wanting to compete with Google. We can offer one of their benefits to a small company, and they can buy it and give it directly to their employees. And what's interesting, though, is how applicable it was mid-market and even larger companies who actually have teams going out and negotiating discounts for themselves, but don't have any place to put it, don't have any analytics on what people are actually using. And from running the BD team for a while, I'll tell you, just even managing promo codes is ongoing giant pain. So it's not necessarily super easy.
Right. I can identify with that. I'm sure a lot of listeners can too. Perfect. Speaking of a lot of listeners, there's going to be multiple perspectives that are listening to this. And I think we've spoken towards the startup owners and the would-be startup owners who would consider coming to this area, to San Francisco. Who else would you suggest is maybe in a good fit to do so and to not do so?
I mean, I think if you're an engineer, I think that makes total sense. If you're a product manager who's got some level of experience, I think it makes a lot of sense to come out here. You'll be fought over. The one thing I'll suggest to everybody is don't fall into the cost of living calculator trap. Whenever you're talking to a company in the Bay Area and you're like, okay, how much am I worth? Go plug it in the cost of living calculator. You're like, oh, it's 30% higher than wherever I live right now. And then you ask for 30% more. Like, sorry, nobody actually pays that actual cost of living difference. You probably will not have as swanky of a lifestyle here as you might have where you came from. In general, I would say, I'm trying to think of a good no answer. I don't know that there is a great no answer. I think a lot of people come here for entry-level jobs and kind of expect too much kind of right out of college. They kind of expect, you know, going to a small company, one of the benefits is there's the opportunity of potentially having like a lot of personal growth within that company, but that's not guaranteed. And I think some people kind of fool themselves into doing that, coming here with that art history major and thinking that they're going to work from support up to a VP within 2 years. Like, I think a lot of people fall into that mindset. It doesn't really happen unless you've got something else, you know, kind of going on that's different and magical about you.
Right. Yeah. That would be a heavy dose of reality, wouldn't it? Why haven't I made VP in 2 years?
Yeah.
Oh my. How about any other insights that come to mind just while we're on the topic of startups, the Bay Area?
It's a common trope too. I think that ideas are cheap and execution is the most valuable thing. I agree with that in most terms, but I think people think about execution too narrowly there. So I recently, it's been a few years since I read it, but I reread the Lean Startup, and it was basically like about some of the things that I've been talking about the ability to pivot and change quickly based on whatever learning you have out in the field anyway. So like, just because I think people will fall in love with an idea and think, okay, if I just execute the hell out of this idea, it's going to be better. And then if it fails, it's because I'm executing poorly. But you got to get out and actually talk to people and figure out what they want. It's not necessarily about your own narrow view. I can't tell you how many like startups there are over the past few years that are geared towards communities that just aren't really represented in the Bay Area, like farmers and stuff like that. Like, unless you have a deep family history of farming, I do not recommend going out and starting a startup on farming in downtown San Francisco. It's probably better to do that much closer to farmers. Some ways where you can actually drive out and ask the farmer what they want to use rather than just sitting in an office like this one and guessing about it.
Right. Do a whiteboard session on agriculture.
Yeah. I've got a lot of friends who work at various nonprofits and like in third world countries, and they get really frustrated when people come in with a bunch of money and a new idea without ever having been to that country before. Like, this great thing's going to change the world. Like, no, we're doing that work right now. It's hard and it's slow and you're not going to disrupt anything, but nobody's going to use your water purifying thing.
Right. Is there anything more you'd like to get out about any perk? You feel pretty good about it?
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. Yeah, it's really about employee happiness and really the productivity gains you can get out of employees who are happy about the place that they work, and especially around areas where retention is difficult. If you're in a hotly contested market or working for or trying to get employees who otherwise would be easily poached by your competition, that you invest and think a little bit more about the overall benefits package rather than just health and salary.
Perfect. Okay. Now, we've already talked through at least one bubble bursting. Just in the span of the history mentioned in this conversation. I'm not suggesting that I'm seeing a bubble bursting or necessarily that we're even in a bubble, but what do you see for the future of the industry?
Yeah, I don't believe in a bubble, honestly, about the current crop of companies. I think there was a certain amount of like frothy overinvestment and large scale valuation. But the idea of a bubble bursting would imply that these companies have no revenue, and these companies are making massive amounts of money. For whatever article comes out trashing Dropbox, like Dropbox just can't, like, doesn't have enough storage in a bank to put all their money. So it's kind of silly to like say that Dropbox is just going to die overnight or Evernote. There's a great article about their turnaround. So yeah, I think there was a little bit of overinvestment, overvaluation in the past year, but bubble, I was never a believer. The idea of a tech bubble implies that tech is a monolithic thing. But when you think about it, like, I don't really sell software. A little bit do. A little bit do some collaborative type stuff. Uber doesn't really sell software. They're not a software company.
Right.
They're a giant taxi service. Postmates is food delivery. So like, these are companies that have tech as their backbone, but they're not tech companies. They're not selling technology. They're selling solutions to problems, which I think is very different from the old world, which was the previous bubble, which is like, I'm just going to throw tech at this thing and it's going to be great and you're going to love it, even though like very few people even have enough internet to handle this thing. So that to me is a little silly. As far as the future of the industry, mostly it's buzzword bingo right now, somewhere between, I'm cautiously optimistic about AI and machine learning. I think it is quite a bit overhyped in what it will do, but I think there's a lot of value to be created there in the near term. I myself am super fascinated by virtual reality. I bought myself a VR headset, much to my wife's and my checkbook chagrin.
Did you go Oculus Rift?
I got the Vive because it had the room scale stuff, and the people are saying that it's quality-wise, it's better. And yeah, it is. It's amazing. Like when people start coming out, nobody's really hit with like super polished software yet, but when it does start hitting and when it does reach that like cost level that everybody can buy those things or have multi-modes where you can use your Android and your Google Cardboard cheap device with people who have the really expensive stuff and they can interact, that's going to be pretty remarkable. And a lot of people are saying that eventually there's going to be a headset that is augmented reality and virtual reality at the same time. So if people will just be walking around, if they can find a non-dorky way of putting them on glasses, more like a Snap or whatever. So yeah, technology-wise, those are the two things that are pretty interesting to me. I'm also really, really fascinated by anybody who's listening right now who is about to go into college. I would personally focus on biotech because the CRISPR-Cas9 technology is freaking astonishing. Like the stuff that you're going to be able to do with that in the future is going to be remarkable.
What is it?
So basically they found an enzyme that can snip DNA in specific places and replace it with other pieces of DNA. And the challenge of genetic engineering is really that genetics aren't so much a blueprint. They're actually like a cake. So it's going to be a lot more experimentation around like how much flour you put in, how much you take out. If you replace this ingredient with that ingredient, what happens? But just like the long-term ramifications for like humanity of in the field of biotechnology is just cast wide open with CRISPR. I'm just fascinated by that stuff.
Excellent. That does sound super interesting. Well, you always have insightful social media posts and... Particularly, I was always impressed by your Quora answers. I always found them particularly insightful. I think after the first Quora response, I probably bookmarked somewhere in my head, get Drew on the show.
Nice. Yeah, happy to do it. That was actually, when I was considering after the acquisition by Microsoft. I'm nothing against Microsoft. I'm just not a big company guy. I just knew I wasn't going to be there very long. So what I wanted to do was kind of encapsulate my knowledge and get everything that I'd learned over the past 2 years at Yammer and in product management and get it out there. And Quora was a great platform for doing that. Those folks are doing great work.
Perfect. Well, I think that's a good segue to the last question, which is, what's the best place for folks to learn more about you and to reach you?
Yeah, I've cut off my Twitter a little bit for taking a little break from social media as an experiment. But definitely Quora, Medium, both under on Medium. Either you can find me under my handle, Drew, D-R-E-W, Dill, D-I-L. Or Product Man is the brand.
Nice. The blog. Very
and
nice.
I take anything that I write on Quora that I'm really proud of, I move over there to Medium as well.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Excellent. Well, Drew, thanks so much for being on the show, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Carl.
Yeah, absolutely.